September the 24th, 1943. Ta-da! I awake at first light, and I heard gunfire. I sat bolt upright. We were down to about 3 knots, very slow, or granny knots, should we say. We were pulling into the Bay of Solano. Oh, dear. All the beaches looked remarkably peaceful. Good. We'd have a quiet landing, I thought. The still waters of the bay were a carnival of ships. Some 200, all shapes and sizes, rode at anchor. The amazing American amphibian DWKs were ferrying supplies ashore. Looming large among all this was the HMS Valiant and the HMS Warspite. Suddenly, one let fly a devastating salvo, which thundered around the bay and rocked the warship some 50 degrees off its axis. That's not going to do Jerry any good, said a sailor. And either it's not going to do the Warspite any good either. In the morning mistiness, we make out hyperactivity on the beaches. Lorries, tanks, half-tracks, beachmasters waving their flags, pointing, lifting, lowering, signalling, shouting, all involved in the logistics of war. The shells from the Warspite were bursting inland on the hills behind Ponte Cagnano, which had dominated the landing beaches. Why wasn't Jerry replying? We drop anchor. Immediately trouble. The chain is wrapped round the propeller shaft. Fun and hijinks! We cheer as the diver goes down. A boat from the beach approached with a purple-faced officer who shouted rude things through a bullhorn at our captain, whose face, incidentally, showed white through the wheelhouse. To make it more difficult for our captain, the destroyers lay a smoke screen around us, and the tannoys crackled. Hello? 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 Ah, it appeared to be the end of the message. It's all getting a bit silly, said Harry. All we had was the view, and now that's been bloody obscured. Now is the time for action. I take my trumpet from its case. There must be men still alive who remember the sound of the last post from the smoke-shrouded boxer. The tannoy crackles again.
Whoever's playing that bugle, please stop,
said a peaked navy voice. The anchor chain is finally freed. The smoke screen lifts to show we are now facing away from the beach.
They've taken us back again, said Gunner Devine.
Of course not, you silly gunner. No, the captain has turned his ship around in the smoke to show us how clever he is. There was a laconic cheer as the diver surfaces. Caught any fish, says someone. He holds up 2 fingers. Is that all? Ha ha ha! The engine starts up again. The ship swings slowly round and points towards Italy. I mean, he couldn't miss it. Subsection sergeants are now going round telling us to get ready to disembark. Drivers are unchaining the restraining cables that secure the vehicles to the deck. The day is now a delightful mixture of sun and a cool wind. The Warspite lets off another terrifying salvo. It thunders around the bay. We watch it erupt among the hills.
That'll make the bastard sit up, said Sergeant Jock Wilson.
I'd have thought, I said, it would have had the opposite effect.
A horseback, he says. Have you been enjoying yourself on this sea trip?
Well, Sergeant, yes or no?
What do you mean, yes or no?
Well, yes I am, and no I'm not. But mostly no I'm not, otherwise yes I am. He frowned.
You'll never get promotion, Milligan.
Wilson was a Glaswegian. He was fitbar mad, football mad, and his family at home were hard put to send him all the news cuttings on Scottish matches. Scottish matches, that is, ones that won't strike. September the 24th, 1943. Regimental diary. HMS Boctor landed party on Red Beach, Solana Bay, at 09:40 hours. The ship touched the beach very gently, so gently I suspected it was not insured.
Sorry about that, gentlemen, said a chuckling navy voice on the tannoy.
A cheer arose from the lads as the landing ramp was lowered. Another salvo from the Warspite. At the same time, an American supply ship starts to broadcast Bing Crosby singing Pennies from Heaven over its speakers. To our right, over the Sorrento Peninsula, a German plane is flying very high. Pinpoints of high bursting ACAC shells trace its path. Time, 9:30. Sea calm. The tannoy crackles. Another coughing demo? No.
Hello! Hello, is it on? Hello? Hello? Hello, Captain Sullivan speaking.
Give us a song, Captain, shouts Gunner White.
Attention, attention. Will all men without vehicles repeat Without vehicles, please disembark.
I think I'm without vehicles, I said to Harry. How about you? No, no, he said. I haven't got vehicles. But they might be incubating, said Edgerton, who is now that the sea is calm, back to his cheery self. The roses haven't come back to his cheeks, but he tells me they're on their way. They've reached me knees and are due in me naval area this afternoon. The tannoy goes.
Will men without vehicles disembark now?
We've been spoken for, Harry, I said, as we trundle down the gangplank to the floor of the boxer. We were about to set foot on Italy. The jaws of the boxer are open onto a great sunlit beach. I realised I could never have afforded all this travel on my own. But this was the hard way. World War II. I always wanted to see Russia. I suppose that would be World War III. I don't believe it. We are walking down the broad ramp onto the Salerno beaches. No bullets, no shells. I didn't even get my feet wet. As I leave my first footprint in the sand, I shouted loudly, "Taxi!" and point in that direction. The woods are full of them, I added to a suspicious sergeant. We move in a milling throng onto the beach. I start sheep beating, and soon we're all at it. Bah, bah, much of the amusement of the seamen watching from the top deck. The scenery by Lance Bomaday Milligan. The beaches are a mixture of volcanic ash and sand, the colour of milky coffee. It stretches left and right as far as the eyes can see. Strewn along the beaches is the debris of a battle that has raged here before. An occasional German long-range shell explodes in the bay. There are no hits. The beaches vary from 20 to 30 yards deep. Back from this is a mixture of pine scrub, walnut trees and sand hillocks mounted with tufa grass. Bulldozers have made clear ways flanked by white ribbons denoting mine-free areas. There is activity the length and breadth of the shores. Great ammo dumps are, as we watch, getting higher and bigger. Just inland, Spitfires are refueling and about to take off from a makeshift airstrip. American Aero Cobras are revving their engines, turning into the wind and taking off in the direction of Naples. We congregated by the sand hillocks and dumped our small kit and started to explore the area. Hard by was an American Lightning plane that had crash-landed half in the sea. A glimpse inside showed a blood-saturated cockpit. He must be very anemic by now, said Sherwood. There are slit trenches everywhere, water bottles, helmets, empty ammo boxes, and spent cartridge cases by the hundreds. Oh, this must have been a hot spot, said Bombardier Fuller. At the bottom of a trench I spot a Scots Guard's cap badge, several pieces of human skull with hair attached, and a curling snapshot of two girls with an address somewhere in Streatham. I put it in my paybook, intending to forward it to the address. We come across 30 or so hurried graves with makeshift wooden markers. Private Edwards E, a number, and that was all. 14 days ago he was alive, thinking, feeling, hoping. If war was a game of cards, I'd say someone was cheating. We pause now for Gunner Edgington's recollections of the landing, which go like this. Stand well back. The scene as it met our eyes as we came up on deck, very early that morning, with the ponderous old HMS Boxer leading the convoy, and still some way off, the distant coast. It was barely dawn, mighty early. It was to be a fine day, though a touch of unaccustomed chilliness in the air. We had, after all, just come from North Africa. The sea calm, the elements indeed almost holding their breath. Overhead, the sky was fairly clear, but there, dead ahead of us, was an awesome curtains-up setting of Salerno, a name which meant nothing to us at that juncture. It did to me, folks. I listened to the radio. An hour later, the sun having fought its way into its kingdom, my God, he's waxing lyrical, the incredible sight of a beautiful, flat, broad, sandy beach, fringed some way back by tall grass over low dunes. Behind that, a great half-moon of meadowland with here and there large wooden areas, a spot that in other times might have been a secluded, quiet paradise of nature, and yet here raged war. For as far as the eyes could see along the beautiful coastline, a veritable armada of ships stood hull to hull, their prows to the beaches, disgorging soldiers and endless waves of sophisticated war-making machines. The activity that swarmed in unbelievably unhurried fashion, reminiscent of Hampstead Heath and the fairgrounds of Easter, had, as its musical accompaniment, the roar of great guns, the incessant racket of powerful vehicles and the cheerful shouts of men with megaphones yelling leisurely instructions to us all. As the box's great jaws opened slowly to the wondering gaze of us all standing within, we saw to our left a Spitfire, brewing up, flaming and smoking hideously, and past it on a grassy fringe a very tall, slim flagpole, from its very top almost to its base a broad strip of red cloth fluttering. Red Beach! Well done, Harry. I'll take over now. There's a check in the post. We all stand well back and far away from any work, and watch the confusion of unloading the vehicles. Officers and sergeants are weaving back and forth, saluting and shouting. "What are they doing?" said Edgington. "I think they're trying to win the war," I said. "Why," he said, "I'm satisfied with it as it is." Kidgell's Scammel lorry is emerging from HMS Boxer. I ponder the logic that gives a driver 5 foot 5 inches, a giant lorry to drive, that necessitates him putting an orange box on the seat before he can see out. Gunner Devine has taken his boots and socks off and is paddling in the sea. An irate officer shouts at him, "Hey, you! What do you think you're doing?"
"I think I'm paddling, sir," was the reply.
"Paddling? This isn't bloody Blackpool."
"I know that, sir. Blackpool's in England."
"Get dressed at once and report to me." The officer stormed off. Well, almost. In turning, he hurt his ankle. Next thing, the khaki god of authority is hopping up and down, holding the injured limb, his face contorted with pain. He sees before him a sea of smiling gunners. "You're on a charge!" he screamed. "I think that's a fair ending," said Edgington, grinning at the departing cripple. My God! Edgington was holding a mug of tea. How did he do it? He pointed to a tin brewing over a derv fire. Sergeant Mick Ryan comes across. He's dripping with sweat. Was it fear or work?
"Come on, you bloody signallers!"
He points to a Scammel and a jackknife 7.2 gun well down in the sand. We take the drag ropes and pull. The rest of the morning is a repetition of this. "Heave! Steady! Heave! Steady! Heave!" A naval officer in virgin white uniform motors past in a jeep. He is tall, suntanned. He has the eyes of a man used to searching distant horizons, a handsome, intelligent face, and strong jaw, and a mouth with the suggestion of a smile. The medals on his jacket told of his past heroisms. He was, how could I describe him? A pain in the ass. Nice Lieutenant Button is approaching. "Hands up, all the men who want to go to war!" There is a massive negative response. He points to me. "You, Milligan." This was victimization. "There must be some mistake, sir. I'm 86 and a cripple." He points. "Over there, 25-year-old liar." I clamber onto Sherwood's Brem carrier to be taken to a premature death. The carrier is overloaded. I perch on top. Button sits in the passenger seat looking at the maps. We roll across the sandhills. It's not easy for me to stay on, so with consummate skill, I fall off. "Stop being silly now, Milligan," said Mr. Button. I remount. This time I jam myself between two kit bags. We reach a secondary road, and here comes the bonus. We pass the temple of Neptune and Cyrene at Paestum, both looking beautiful in the sunlight. Strung from the Doric columns are lines of soldiers washing. At last they had been put to practical use. If only the ancient Greeks had known! What the ancient Greeks didn't know was that I, Lance Bombardier Milligan, had fallen off again. I got back on. This time I removed the kit bags. I climbed into the hole, and they lowered the kit bags on top of me, leaving my head and shoulders free. I appealed to Sherwood to drive slowly past the temples.
"What temples?"
"You'll never get another chance to see them close at hand," I said.
"You're right," he said. "You'll never get another chance to see them again." And he drove on.
Mr. Button had heard all this. "Bombardier Sherwood is not of a scholastic mind, Milligan. He is the son of the soccer field. Had you said, 'Slow down, Reading are playing the Mussolini Rovers,' I'm sure it would have touched part of his English soul that is forever football." We had cleared the sand dunes, the minor roads, and had turned left onto the Battipaglia Highway going north. We wait to allow some of the vehicles to catch up with us. There's no sign.
"I suppose they've stopped to see the temples," grinned Sherwood.
The houses that lined the road were 2-story square whitewashed.
Hanging on the walls were strings of tomatoes. People sit outside on simple wood and rushed chairs. The women were mostly bare-legged, wearing black clothes and wooden-soled sandals. Some pretty-faced girls looked from the upper windows. A short, fat, middle-aged bawling man runs across the road and gives us a bunch of purple grapes. He smiles, shakes his hand in a friendly gesture. "Viva Inglese! Viva Inglese!" he says. I chew grapes and spit the pips at the neck of Sherwood. 20 minutes later, our little convoy is complete. We are to establish an OP somewhere up there. Button point to the mountainous countryside ahead. I hated OPs. When they were quiet, they were quiet. But when the shit was flying, it was a dicey place. We passed several burnt-out tanks, mostly ours, and that was the trouble. Jerry had better tanks. We were trying to get away with superiority in numbers. Very unfair on our tank crews. We never had any armor to match the Tiger or the Yag Panther. The shades of night were falling fast as we went through Battipaglia, past the ruins of the tobacco factory that had been a bloodbath for both sides.